It's Christmas when you are willing to let Jesus be born in you, even when you're having a rotten day. This is Father Scott C. Toller. What follows next is a joyful reflection. It's Wednesday, and if by this point in the week you are really feeling overwhelmed by your duties, obligations, by all the tasks you have to perform, when you're thinking like, I'm struggling here, I'm sinking from under the weight of all the pressures of my, you got to laugh. You got to find time to laugh. You got to make something make you laugh, a story, a joke. Share it with somebody else. The two of you laughing. Laughter is the music of the heart. Laughter is pain turned inside out. Laughter is internal jogging. Laughter is the safety valve. You know, when we're ready to explode, if we laugh, laughter relaxes our muscles. Laughter is a good opportunity to handle all the pressures. And a lot of people work 40, 50, 60-hour work weeks, and the pressure is incredible with little job security. You got to laugh, folks. Are you ready to celebrate Christmas again? Because every Wednesday this year I'm celebrating Christmas. And how do I celebrate it? Well, I share stories behind the best love songs of Christmas from a book written by Ace Collins. And what song I want to share with you today, the background story to the song It Came Upon the Midnight Clear. In 1849, a Unitarian minister from Wayland, Massachusetts, was writing a Christmas Eve message for his congregation. As Dr. Edmund Sears worked on his sermon, he was a troubled man. Though it would be another decade before a civil war tore the United States apart, the debate over slavery, compounded by the poverty he saw in his own community, had all but broken the man's spirit. He desperately searched for words to inspire his congregation, but he was having a problem lifting even his own spirit above the depressing scenes that surrounded him. Sears, then 39 years old, had been educated at the Union College in Schenectady, New York, and at Harvard Divinity School. Though the Unitarian Church was known for not exposing, believing, the divinity of Christ, Sears preached the divine nature of Jesus in his weekly sermons. He believed that Jesus was the Son of God and had died on the cross for man's sins. He also believed that every Christian should be involved in reaching out to the lost, the helpless, and the poor. In his community, Sears was a force of caring in a world that seemed to be concern itself little with the traumas of the hunger or the sick. His burden for the helpless forced him to reach out each day to those Christ called the least of these. Yet as he worked on writing an uplifting Christmas message, it was the poverty and the hopelessness of the people he touched in the slums that sickened his heart and blocked his progress. He must have wondered how he could write about the light of the world when the world seemed so very dark. As Sears struggled, he thumbed through his well-worn Bible. In the second chapter of Luke, the minister was touched by the 8th and 9th verses. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. After considering the miraculous nature of that long-ago moment, Sears picked up his pen and jotted down a 5-verse poem. He called it, It Came Upon the Midnight Clear. He then retrieved from his files another Christmas poem he had written a decade before. Calm on the listening ear of night comes heaven's melodious strains. Beginning his message with his older Christmas poem, he quickly wrote a short sermon and decided to end his Christmas service with the inspired words of his newest poem. Today's Sears poem, Turned Carol, is considered joyful and uplifting. Yet when first delivered, its audience probably saw it as more a charge or a challenge than the story of a miraculous birth on a faraway land. While the minister wanted his congregation to celebrate Christmas, he also wanted them to reach out to the poor, to address the nation's social skills, and consider what they could do as individuals to best reflect the Spirit of Christ in their daily lives. In other words, he wanted to see people look to heaven and understand how God needed them to serve man in his name. Nowhere was this message more obvious than in the poem's second verse, one that has been discarded and all but forgotten. And the verse goes like this. Yet with the woes of sin and strife, the world hath suffered long. Beneath the angel's strain have rolled 2,000 years of wrong. And man at war with man hears not the love song which they bring. Oh, hush the noise, ye men of strife, and hear the angels sing. Not only was the beauty and wonder of the Christmas story woven into a lyrical fabric that was rich and meaningful, but Sears also managed to point out that God, in the form of a child, was entering a world that sorely needed his help. He wanted his congregation in the world to hear those cries as he did. Since Sears was a magazine and newspaper editor in addition to being a preacher, he had the means to bring his new poem to a wider audience than just his church. The Christian Register, one of the publications for which Sears penned features, printed It Came Upon the Midnight Clear in its December 29, 1849 issue. Yet, as is so often the case with inspired work, it would take a second man to breathe lasting life into the poem and make it a Christmas classic. Richard Storrs Willis was a Yale graduate who had been composing choral pieces since his youth. After graduating from college, the native Bostonian furthered his education in Germany in the 1840s by studying with Moritz Leipitzig and Felix Mendelssohn. In 1848, he returned to the United States and became the music critic for the New York Times. An avid reader, Willis probably found Sears' poem in the Christian Register. Earlier, the composer had written a tune he called simply Carol. He discovered that this melody perfectly fit with the lyrics of the poem. Willis's combination of music and words was first published in 1850 with the uninspired title Study Number 23. A decade later, using a new updated arrangement, Willis republished the songs as While Shepherds Watch Their Flocks by Night. It is the second version that is still sung today. Within a decade of its second printing, It Came Upon the Midnight Clear had been adopted for use in a wide range of denominational hymn books. As the tradition of caroling spread from New England and was adopted throughout the country, the song became a standard for roaming bands or Christmas choirs as well. Yet it wasn't until the 20th century that the carol would become one of the world's most popular Christmas messages and song. During World War I, American troops sang It Came Upon the Midnight Clear throughout France during the holiday season. Thus the song went to war and came home with a generation of men who made it a part of their holiday traditions. 25 years later, U.S. troops took the song back to the front lines in World War II, and entertainers such as Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore performed the haunting carol throughout the Pacific and Europe at USO shows. For homesick soldiers, no words seemed to voice their own prayer of peace on earth, as well as those penned by Edmund Sears a century before. The lasting impact of the song is probably due in part to its last verse. In that stanza, Sears begged the world to sing back to heaven the song of hope, peace, love, joy, and salvation. Although It Came Upon the Midnight Clear has been sung millions of times since Sears first read his poem on a cold Christmas Eve in 1849, most Christians have not yet joined together to cure the world's ills and bring peace to all people. The author's charge, and indeed Jesus' own call, remains largely unanswered. And the words to the song, It came upon a midnight clear, that glorious song of old, from angels bending near the earth to touch their harps of gold. Peace on the earth, goodwill to men, from heaven's all-gracious King. The world in solemn stillness lay to hear the angels sing. Still through the cloven skies they come with peaceful wings unfurled, and still their heavenly music floats o'er all the weary world. Above its sad and lowly plains they bend on hovering wing, and ever o'er its Babel sounds the blessed angels sing. And ye beneath life's crushing load, whose forms are bending low, who toil along the climbing way with painful steps and slow, look now, for glad and golden hours come swiftly on the wing, or rest beside the weary road and hear the angels sing. For lo, the days are hastening on, by prophets seen of old, when with the ever-circling years shall come the time foretold, when the new heaven and earth shall own the Prince of Peace their King, and the whole world send back the song which now the angels sing. It's a great song, huh? I love singing Christmas songs. Do you? We're losing that art. You know what? When I grew up, we took time to sing Christmas songs. Now we're all busy, or we think partying needs to be separated from Christmas songs. Or people say, well, I don't sing. I love to sing Christmas songs. And the Christmas songs that have a Christian message, a religious message to them, is really a way to deepen our faith. That's when people were illiterate, when large numbers of people were illiterate, that's the one of the ways they kept their faith alive. They learned their faith. Today's food for thought comes from William Oslow. He writes, soap and water and common sense are the best disinfectants. That's a clever play there, huh? Soap and water, and especially common sense, are the best disinfectants. Cleans up your mind, your heart, your soul, your mouth. Who do I want you to pray for you today? I want you to pray for the men and women in the army. Our men and women who protect our country. Our women and our men who go off to far-off lands to try to help there. To try to protect those who are being attacked by powerful nations or powerful forces within their own country. Not easy to be a military person right now. We want to pray that God keeps them safe from harm. And if they've already been wounded, that they can be healed. And if they're going to be carrying a heavy cross the rest of their life because of some wound, mentally or physically, that God will send special people into their lives to be there for them and with them. We pray, dear God, for any military peace who have died, for those people who have given their lives for our protection, our safety, our freedom. Give them eternal rest. And so please, don't be so busy today that you don't take time to pray for the men and women who serve in the army. Today's small attempt to make you smile. Hey, did you hear about the minister who formed a bowling team? The team called themselves Holy Rollers. Want to contact me? Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. Love to hear from you. You have no idea when I hear from the listeners who say, Father Scott, I listen to your program. I find it helpful. That is such a shot in the arm for me. I find that so very, very helpful. Love to hear from you. And by the way, send me your prayer intentions. I faithfully will take them to prayer. I'll storm heaven with you and for you. Can you write a check to help me keep my hospital for the poor and sick open in Oaxaca, Mexico? Would you do that? Would you be that generous? Make the check to Tash Inc., T-A-S-H, Inc., send it to Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. If you use the internet, visit my website, I think you'll enjoy it, at Father Scott, spell out Father, fatherscott.com. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, where there is hatred, let me sow love, where there is injury, pardon, where there is doubt, faith, where there is despair, hope, where there is darkness, light, and where there is sadness, joy. Joyful, joyful, Lord, we adore Thee.